So anyway, I mean, Modela for the Baruch Hu, I come before you as with great thanks to Kodesh Baruch Hu. You can, of course, pass it down. I have to say this morning a few things about this book and how it came about. And first and foremost, to give my absolute gratitude to this kollel. You are the reason this book came out. The book started as shiurim in the kollel about davening. If you recall, we spent an entire year on it with the goal that hopefully we'll daven at the same level that we learn and that we talk and that we converse and that we create relationships. I have a feeling, and I don't think it's unfounded, that the majority of Jews that daven three times a day are davening the way they davened in grade 5 or 6. Why do I pick grade 5 and 6 of all the grades that we went through? Because that was the last time we were taught davening. In other words, you taught moda'ani, a little bit brachos, then you go on to this and that. By grade 5 and 6 in a typical day school, you finish davening. And no more are you taught davening. You may be taught the laws of davening, but you are not taught davening. And therefore, we dedicated an entire year here in the Kollel to try to bring up the level of our davening to at least the level we learn Gemara, or at least the level we learn mathematics, and the level you read a newspaper article, etc. So first and foremost, that was the goal of what we did around this table, and that's why I decided to put it out in a book. I didn't think this was a problem just of the people sitting around the table. I really thought, and I still think, that it is a global challenge that we have. The challenge that we have is that we are not davening at a level in which we learn or converse or create relationships. Davening, at best, is consistent yet primitive, and for many Jews, it is an annoyance. That's the first reason why I decided to dedicate a year in the Kollel to it, and that's why it came out eventually in a book. So first and foremost, the Kollel deserves thanks. You were the sounding board. You were the place where these ideas came out clearly. They were in my mind for years, and it went through various different grades and degradations and, I would say, upheavals, and of course it triumphed as well. But first and foremost, it happened around this table, Bisofo Shel Davar, at the end of the day, and I thank you for allowing me to be the sounding board. This book was eventually transcribed. From the transcribing, it was edited by me at least three times. A lot of sources were added. Then it was brought to the editors of Geffen, who looked at it and obviously took it apart in the way they saw fit, and they were wonderful and excellent to work with. And Baruch Hashem, last week I was able to hold the book in my hands. But there's another reason why I make mentioning this book this morning, not just because I wanted to give my Hakaras HaTov to the place it all started, and that was here, but rather for another reason. We daven a lot. If you go through the year and you want to do the statistics of how much time you spend in davening, you will come up to a very high number. If a typical day gets you about 50 to an minutes to an hour of davening, times that by 365 days a year, add in a musaf and a Shabbos and a yontiv and a Rosh Chodesh and a Chol HaMoed, we daven a lot. Now, if we daven so much, you would have thought that what is the result? We'd be ultra experts in davening. And yet, I have a feeling, and I've heard it not by one person, not by two people, but by endless people around the world that are dedicated to davening. I'm not talking about people that are not dedicated to davening. People that are dedicated to davening. That davening is something that they have to get over with. Rav Soloveitchik said it years ago, beautifully. He said, Jews in America, and this is true about Jews around the world, Jews in America do not like to daven, but they love being in a situation in which they have davened. Very sharp statement. Let's analyze it. You have davened. Mincha, out of the way. We can move on in life. Davening, standing before God in shul, annoyance. Can't stand any minute I'm there. The shorter, the better. When I'm out the door, I feel great. Oh, check. Halachically, by the way, there could be a very good reason why davening should be in your schedule. Can anyone tell me why? This is not in the book, so if you buy the book, you won't hear see this in the book. There's a halacha. I don't know why people don't keep it, but there's a halacha. There's certain actions you're not allowed to do before you daven mincha, before you say kriyat shema at night, before you daven ma'ariv. One of the ways to get out of that, in other words, to have a lunch before you daven mincha, is if you have a reminder or a kavua minyan. So if you have a reminder in your phone that beeps at a time in which you're supposed to daven, then it's okay to eat beforehand. So I know many people, and I'm one of them. The minute I've davened mincha, I strike it off my schedule. But my question is, if the Chachamim said daven 3 times a day, what are we supposed to do in there? What are we supposed to feel? And what are we supposed to come out with? What is a Jew supposed to feel like after he stood before God in davening? Is he the same person that went into shul as he was as we went out to shul? Or is he different? I know many people in the middle of the day have mincha minyans in their place. Work, it's wonderful. But yet, they go into mincha and they come out and the only thing they could say is, I've davened mincha. There has to be more than that. You went through some sort of an experience when you're standing there. If you have this rendezvous with God 3 times a day, it can't be that it means nothing. And what I tried to do in this book, as I tried to do around this table, was not to recreate any wheel about davening. There are endless books about davening. I'm not the first, and I'm definitely not going to be the last. What I tried to do was to connect what you know to what I believe you don't yet know. To connect what is very firm in the mind of a Jew to what is not yet firm. Namely, what do we know about davening? What do we know about davening? You got it. We know the halachas of davening. We know when we're supposed to daven. We know when we can't daven anymore. There's a time for shachar, time for mincha, time for ma'ariv, and there's a cutoff point. We know what we're supposed to do in davening, stand up, sit down. We know when we're supposed to bow. All the halachas of davening, I think many Jews know. Exactly. I wanted to connect the halachas of davening to the atmosphere, or to be more precise, to the feeling and the emotion that a Jew should feel. I didn't want to take davening in this abstract way and talk about it. Connect it practically to what you know, namely the halachos of davening, and to connect it very clearly to life. And therefore, I felt it was important that just like we have this, thank God, that we have this wonderful knowledge of the laws of davening, hopefully we'll have this wonderful knowledge of the emotions of davening as well.
One question is, if davening is a replacement for the Torah notes, are we look into that in Gemara to see if there's some instructions of what we should be feeling for the Torah notes?
I think yes.
And also relates to the whole topic, we did the mitzvah, so now what?
Absolutely.
But really, any of it, you took a little bit actually. You gave tzedakah, whatever it is that we did do.
So let me explain. So just to sum up what we said until now, first of all, I think that you have to teach davening past grade school, and that's why I wrote the book. Forget about what's in the book. You have to teach davening past grade 5 and 6. If you went to Hebrew school when you were bar bat mitzvah, that was the end. You have to teach davening past that age, so that davening is at a level. And number two, I think the halachos of davening should be at least on the same level as the emotions of davening. And now you bring me to my third point. So why is davening different? After all, the whole year we talk about mitzvahs in general, and we said, and now what? When we shake the lulav, or when we heard a kriyas haTorah, why is davening different? And here we come to the very fundamental davening. A fundamental of davening, which today is a big problem. It used to not be a problem, and today it is a problem. And what is that? Does it ever say in the Torah to say certain words every day? Say certain words every day. Does it ever say you have to say X every day?
What, Shema?
Shema! Besides Shema, does it say you have to say X words every day? No. What does it say about davening? If you have to somehow or another find a biblical mandated verse that requires you, obligates you to daven, does it ever say to daven, to say certain words?
No.
Never.
You refer to Baba.
So, the Rambam, as Rabbi Yedidyahu said, says that the source of davening is one of those psukim that talk about avodah shebalev, the work of the heart. So it doesn't say to daven, it says your heart should be spilled before God, quote unquote. Doesn't say to say words. Doesn't say you have to say X. When a guy brings Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, he has to say the parsha of Arami Ovei David. when a person ultimately has to do vidui ma'aseris, we read in the parsha, after 3 years plus, and after another 3 years plus, he has to say the vidui ma'aser. But it never says to say davening. It says to stand before God and open your heart. The Ramban, Nachmanides, doesn't agree with the Rambam, and says there's a chiyuv to daven only when there's a problem. Quoting the psukim in Parshat Bahaa Halotcha, v'chitavol milchama ba'artzechem al atzara tzorerethem, if there is a problem, there's a war, and you have to take the chatzrot tzrot, and you have to daven before God. Again, you spill your heart out before God, but there is never a chiyuv to say certain words. So we have a problem today. If the whole source of davening is the work of the heart, it's very difficult to do that when you take into your hand something that tells you what to say. There's a fixed text. There's even a fixed time. Not only is there a fixed text and there's a fixed time, there's also a fixed place that you're supposed to daven. And to get your heart into all that is very difficult. And that's why I believe it's important to talk about davening. Because unlike other mitzvahs, where, quite frankly, if you did the mitzvah and you didn't feel anything, I think you're a monkey. But yeah, I can live with that. You did what God wanted. It's not the best, but it's livable. When it comes to davening, it can't be that way, because never in the Torah did it say to daven. It says to spill your heart out. So it can't be that a Jew comes before God and davens mincha and finishes mincha and goes back to his day, and you ask him, what did you do in there? And he has to think about it. Because it is supposed to be an emotional experience. And that's why I think davening is different than everything else we spoke about throughout the year. Davening is unique because it never says in the Torah to daven, per se. It says to spill out your heart, according to the Rambam, when there's an acute problem, to come before God and to spill your heart out and say there's an acute problem, there's a war, there's a this, there's a that. Now, Bruce asked a question, and I do relate to it, and that is the korbanos. There is two sources in the Gemara that seems to be one, in my opinion, in Masechet Brachot. Why do we daven three times a day? So as you know, the first source is not korbanos, but what? Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov.
I guess Ramban wouldn't agree with it.
The source of davening three times a day, not once a day. When we just spoke about the Rambam versus the Ramban, it was talking about once a day, or perhaps not once a day, only when there's a problem. We're talking about our practice of three times a day. The Gemara says Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And, as Bruce pointed out, what else does it say? Korbanot. So there's a korban tamid you bring in the morning. There's a korban tamid you bring in the afternoon. And in the evening, you burn off the part that you didn't have enough time to burn during the day. Those are the two sources quoted in the Gemara. How does that relate to davening? So, if you think about it, these two sources are very different. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov davened when there was an acute need. If you recall, Avram davened when he wanted to save Sdom. Yitzchak, very hard to understand what his problem was. I suggested that his issue was that he was lonely and that he needed that rendezvous with God as an emotional need at that point in his life. His mother had died. He didn't yet get married. He just came off the Arkada. He was not going through easy time in his life, and Yaakov's away from life. So those are very emotional experiences. But when you look at the korbanos, it's every single day. Once a day in the morning, or once a evening, as we say in the famous psukim, et korban, et akeves echad ta'aseh v'boker, et akeves hasheni ta'aseh v'arba'im. That consistency every single day. And that consistency every single day is not easy. So if you think about it, there's two sources for davening. One is very spontaneous and emotional, and the other is very consistent, which is not necessarily spontaneous or emotional. Hold on, Bruce. So, how do we deal with it? I wanted to suggest, as I did, and there's a whole chapter in the book about Ritzei, which is part of our Shmoneh Esrei, that davening should be like a sacrifice. You are coming before God and sacrificing before God. When you sacrifice, Sefer HaChinuch talks about it, others, you're basically saying, I should be here instead of this korban, but I'm bringing the korban instead, like when you bring a korban chatat, or I'm giving something to God. I suggested that when you come before davening, you do give something to God. You open up your heart before God. You're opening up the most private part of your essence before only God. There's things right now as I sit before you that I'm hiding from you, and you're hiding from me. We don't tell everyone our whole life story. except God we do. And there's no hiding from God. And that's what a korban is like. Sacrifice, by definition, means you sacrifice your entire self. As we say in the David Hashem Ori that we've been saying since Rosh Chodesh Elul, Ki avivi imi azavuni v'Hashem yasveni. I have no mother, I have no father, I have God and me in davening. Yeah.
When we're talking about Avod, they have their personal tefillah of Mishra. We can relate to that. But Korbanot sound like a national mitzvah. We have a representative bringing the Korban, we have a mitzvah.
So you are making a good distinction with one error. There are, first of all, personal korbanot that you can bring. Yeah. It's not just national. The korban tamid was national korban. However, the Gemara says, is it even conceivable that your korban's bringing brought in the Beis HaMikdash and you're not part of it? Usually when you bring a korban, you have to stand there. Many korbanos, you do smicha on, you put your hands on, and then it's brought. So the Gemara assumes that the korban brought every day is your korban and my korban. It's what's called a korban tzibur. It's a korban of the entire congregation. So how is it that it's your korban? I mean, you're living in the Galil, and you wake up in the morning and go to work, and in the Beis HaMikdash, they're bringing a korban. How do you connect to that korban? Answer is, there was the ma'amadot. Correct. In other words, there was a system where all Am Yisrael was part of that korban. Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim were all part of it. The Yisraelim davin, the ma'amadot, the Levim sang the Shir Shel Yom, and the Kohanim actually brought the korban. So, that is indeed what a korban tamid is and should be every day. Every day there's a sacrifice, not of the Beis HaMikdash, but of all the Jewish people.
So imagine if every street in the front had a representative in the synagogue as a witness. I mean, we don't copy that system.
I think that we do copy that system, and that's why in my book I dedicated about a good chunk of the beginning of the book to a Jew at Minyan. Because Minyan is an issue. Because if it's the work of the heart, then why don't we daven in a minyan? Work of the heart at home, privately, would be the best place for us to have the right kavana, right? So why don't we daven in a shul? Maybe the air conditioning doesn't work. Maybe davening's too fast, too slow. I don't know what. And somehow minyan is the place to be. And I dedicate a lot of time to it. And one of the things I suggest, as I suggested around this table, is that with all the disadvantages of minyan, and Baruch Hashem there are, there are also advantages. And one of them is that issue called a korban tzivur. We have two kinds of korbanot. We have a korban, three kinds actually. A korban yachid is your korban. Say you went over the high seas, you bring a korban todah, it's your business. The second is a korban shutafin. A bunch of people get together to bring one korban, like a korban pesach. But there's a third korban called a korban tzivur, which is all the people, all the Jewish people bring it. And that's what I think minyan is today. You're not just there davening for yourself. You're davening on behalf of the entire Jewish people and the hopefully representatives of the entire Jewish people in davening with you. And that's why a minyan has a different experience than davening alone. When you daven alone, it's like a korban yachid. But when you daven in a minyan, you have also that korban tzibur. In my opinion, where does it manifest itself? Not in your private Shmoneh Esrei. Your private Shmoneh Esrei, 10 individuals are davening on their own before God. Personally. Albeit in the same room. Chazarat Hashatz. The Rambam calls Chazarat Hashatz not Tfilat B'Tzibor, davening in the congregation, but Tfilat Ha-Tzibor, the davening of the congregation, because he believes that it's like one davening being brought before God by a chazan with all the Jewish people behind you. That's what I believe a true shliach tzibur should be. That's why the word chazan never sit well with me. A person who stands in front of the congregation and leads it in prayer should be a shliach tzibur, a messenger of the congregation. And a messenger works with the congregation together. It's a unified effort to come before God, just like a korban tamid was. So ultimately, that's what I believe happens with korbanot and davening. First of all, it's that personal sacrifice. I open my heart before God and only before God. And thank God Chana led the way for us to daven and no one else hears. More important, but more than that, when you daven together in a minyan, you also have that additional aspect of a korban tzibur of the whole entire congregation davening. Yes?
I glanced at your sefer. First of all, mazal tov, congratulations.
Thank
it
you.
It looks like some that's going to be a bestseller.
Oh, nice.
Very well written.
I accept the compliment, though I know the truth. Yes.
Maybe because I didn't read the whole book. One thing is, why do you call it with age? Why?
Okay. So that's. I just wanted to end with the good question that Rabbi Yedidyahu answered. I was contemplating with the what to call the book, and I really wanted to call it "Pay Attention," because that's the essence of the entire book. Just pay attention to what you're doing in davening. You're there every single day. Pay attention. Pay attention to what it means to say this and that and what you're doing. Pay attention. That's the entire book. But I felt it wasn't nice to reprimand the person in the title of the book. You know, pay attention is like saying this or that. But I did want to basically connote in the title that I want people to daven at an age that's suitable for them. Not as fifth graders, but as 31-year-olds, 61-year-olds, or whatever it is. And therefore I called it daven your age. It's a play on words, like saying, play with someone your own size, or pick on someone your own size. I called it daven your age. You are now 38, you are now 48, that's the level your davening should be at. It shouldn't be at a level of a fifth grader.
I say that if you don't study Torah, you don't stay at the same level, you fall back. So maybe it's the same with davening.
Yeah, I was thinking that. Is that what you're saying? What you're saying?
You need to grow in davening.
Correct. I think we need to grow in davening and daven at your own age. Daven at an appropriate age for you. And if you look in the cover, it's a beautiful cover that I didn't design, but it definitely connotes what I wanted to say. There's blocks that kids play with, and there's glasses that usually people that are older wear. And that's the idea. The idea is that you should daven your own age. Daven at your age.
So what you're saying is upgrading prayer?
I am trying not to upgrade prayer, definitely upgrade it, but I am also trying to bring prayer to a level that is suitable for your age at this moment.
Does that mean a person who's 90 should be crying more? Or should be happier more?
It depends what his situation or her situation is at that age.
But then somebody will come along and say, therefore, people in their 30s should have a young people's minyan, and people in the Moshe Skenan should stay in the Moshe Skenan. And I would say, have everyone davening together.
I am not sure. I'm not sure that that's such a terrible solution to many problems we have in shuls. There are different stages in people's lives. We have an old tradition that Shlomo HaMelech went through three stages. He went through the Shir HaShirim stage, the Mishlei stage, and the Kohelet stage. Shir HaShirim was when he was young, and everything is great in life, and there's daisies and roses.
So instead of a young
then you had his life with Mishlei, where he was getting smarter, and you see in there there's negative and positive. And finally, he was a grumpy old man, he wrote Kohelet. That's what the tradition is. I don't agree with that tradition. I don't think that's what Kohelet is. But there's definitely truth that people go through. And yes, I am now 36. And quite frankly, I don't see myself davening with high school people. It's not a comfortable setting for me. And I don't think it's comfortable for them to daven with me. What I did want to prevent in this...
But you daven with somebody who's 80 or 90?
Yes, I can relate to different people a bit easier, but if you ask me what's my ultimate minion, it would be people with my same mindset, people in my same kind of level at life. But this leads me to something that really bothered me, and with this I conclude...
If those high school kids,
it's mindset, it's not age, it's not that. It's mindset and where you are in life and what you are in life. It's very important.
So you can have the same age, different shuls, and you like one.
I like one shul with different minions. That's my own liking. But okay, I can hear the argument for different shul. I like one shul, one community, albeit when it comes to davening, people have different needs. And there's different ways to get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Some with the Karblach minion, some without the singing, etc. What I don't want before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is something that someone said to me. I don't even remember who said it, and this kept on coming back to me as I wrote the book. This guy sometimes a shliach tzibur. He's a chazan in a minion, and he uses certain tunes. Some of them I like, some of them I don't like, but that's the nature of the beast. And once, he told me a line that went like this. He said, you know, I was told by a gabbai, just don't innovate when you're up there. This way you don't get anyone mad. Don't innovate when you're up there. Namely, when you stand at the pulpit, same tunes, that everyone's been singing for 40, don't innovate, nothing, you don't get anyone mad. And that really bothered me. It really bothered me because I'm not talking about nusach. I'm talking about tunes. The tradition, the Maharil, it's quoted in the Ramah that you're referring to, is talking about nusach. Nusach, not necessarily nigunim. People have grown. We once thought that, I don't know, I'm just going to throw out, you know, it's not nice. There was in the 50s certain groups and certain songs that were in, and then we went to the 60s and the 70s, and now we're in the year 2013. If your davening is still like the 50s, then it's not connecting to the new generation. And if you're going to use that lechadodi and that keladon, just because don't innovate, you don't get anyone mad, then davening is not a true expression of where you are today. By the way, I did not want the book to connote in any which way that we should change the sitter, and I didn't. I can make an argument for it. Therefore, I called the daven your age for another reason. There's something out there called new age. It was a play on words. Not new age, but your age. But it has to connote where you are. And just using the same tools from the 50s, because that's what was always done, we've grown. We're in a new situation today. It's not the same. But you know, when I was growing up, I don't recall ever in shul on a Friday night they sang Vishamru together. They said Vishamru, they didn't sing Vishamru. Today, almost every shul sings Vishamru B'nai Israel. I don't like it. I don't even say Vishamru Friday night for different halachic reasons. But quite frankly,
it's beautiful.
It shows that we've grown. So I don't like people who think, come Rosh Hashanah, come Yom Kippur, Piyutim, all right, same nigunim we've always used, just like I grew up, because this way no one gets mad. Well, if that's the way it is, then davening's dull and boring and out of age and not your age. No, yes.
I wanted to ask you about Sfat Avim. Have you ever been in a Mizrahi?
Sure.
Minyan?
Sure.
They use the same nigunim.
No, they don't.
They do.
No, they don't.
They don't change their nigunim Friday.
They do. First of all, they do change the nigunim. It depends which Sfardi shul you're going to. Many Sfardi shuls I know have introduced new nigunim. It's not true. I just give you an example. I have a Sfardi shul near my house. Sometimes I like going there Friday night because I like the way they divide up davening for various reasons. They give kids to daven a little. This, everyone's split up. The yigdal is never the same, for example. The Yigdal was never the same. The Lechadodi, I do recall, was always the same, and everyone connects to it. But I've been to Sephardic shuls where the Lechadodi was different. I didn't even recognize the tune.
Well, they're different Sephardim.
Yeah, but again, even in the same shul. And some Ashkenazim use Sephardic tunes. It's not the end of the world. We're in a kibbutz galuyot today. You have to remember. You're in a kibbutz galuyot today, so for us to use a Sephardic tune on a Rosh Hashanah for a piyut, I'm not talking about nusach. Talking about the piyutim, where we use nigunim, we use songs. I don't think it's so terrible to use a Sephardic tune everybody knows.
I like the Sephardic songs, but they start the world. Rabbi Yeshua,
do you understand different shuls having different criteria? Let's say a Chabad shul wants only the nusach of Chabad. On the other hand, I like to go to a Chabad shul, but if they'll do a Breslov tune or a Litvish tune, it's good as well. In other words, I like it more pluralistic. But I can see a shul that Chabad doesn't want to move.
Who's next on the, are you next on the list?
Yes.
Okay, so can I take a minute of your time? Okay.
20 minutes.
I don't know, 1 minute of your time. I just want to say. I have a lot to say about being a Baal Tefillah. I also act as a Baal Tefillah. And I believe two things about Baal Tefillah. Number one, I can know the two before. You have to be a Shliach Tzibur. You have to know the Tzibur that you are representing. You cannot be a chazen that cares about one thing and one thing alone, and that is, what do I like? You want to do what you like? Daven in your own room. You want to daven in a shul and you want to be a representative of the congregation, a shliach tzibur? You have to look around the room and say to yourself, how do I be a proper messenger of this group?
And if the gabbai is the person who tells you.
So, if you have a chazen that gets up there and, you know, does a long cantorial on a matana tokef, because that's what he enjoys and likes, but the tzibur can't stand it, he's not a shliach tzibur. And vice versa. If he gets up there and sings the way, oh, well, very fast davening, but the people wanted something more solemn. He's also not a shliach tzibur. So the first thing a chazan should remember is he is the representative of those in the room. And therefore, if you have people in the room that know Shveki and Abram Fried and Mordechai ben David, Azoy, those are the nigunim. And if the people there don't know this, they're still in what we call, in my language, Sirei Sochnut. They know a little Am Yisrael Chai, Kol Olam Kulo, and that's their whole nigunim. So be it. Number two. This is more important, I think, than number one. You also have a responsibility to bring out davening in a substantial way. The words of the davening and the nigun that you pick should jive. Many a times I've seen that they don't. One of the first people that I know of that actually related to this is Rabbi Henkin, the contemporary Rabbi Henkin, lives in Yerushalayim. Rabbanit Henkin's husband, what's her name? What's his name?
Rabbi Yehuda Henkin.
Rabbi Yehuda Henkin should live there for many more years. The grandson of Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, Zechon Levracha. He wrote an article that started like this. The name of the article is, Who Shall Live and Who Shall Die? La 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 la. That's the name of the article. Da 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 da. Very interesting article. What he basically says is, there's parts of davening that are so sad, that are so terrible and traumatic, and chazanim get out up there and have no idea what they're saying, and they start happy clappy. So, Barosh Hashanah yikatehu, uviyom tzom kipun yechatehu, kama yavrun mi yichye mi yamut, who shall live, who shall die? They start singing it like this. Barosh Hashanah yikatehu, oh, oh, we're going up to the rodeo over here. And vice versa. You're in the middle of Shema Koleinu on Yom Kippur. The Shema Koleinu that comes before the Vinu. Shema Koleinu Hashem Elokeinu. God, listen to us. No niggun for that. What's the next pasuk? Hashiveinu. Hashiveinu. It's not appropriate. And vice versa. A guy once got up on Yom HaAtzmaut in this city of ours, Hallel, and he gets the Hodu LaHashem Ki Tov Ki LaOlam Chasdo. And the niggun he picked was exactly the niggun I use when I say Unatana Tokif. It's slow. It's solemn. I think people there fell asleep. Not appropriate. You have to bring out what the words are saying in a very proper way. You cannot go ahead and sing a happy tune for a sad part and a sad tune for a happy part. I mean, it's just not appropriate. I know someone that was a chazan on Yom Kippur. On Yom Kippur! So you think he's more conversed with the davening, he's more conversed with what he says. And I told him afterwards, and I thank God he listened, and he understood, and I said to him, excuse me, I said Yom Kippur, Tfilat Geshem. Tfilat Geshem is a big problem in Israel, that's on Shmini Atzeret, which is Simchas Torah, and there's a part in there, in the Tfilat Geshem, I forgot the words, at the end of the Tfilat Geshem, that says, remember all the Jews that spilled blood. And he was singing it to a Karblach Nigun, that was one of the happiest Nigunim I know. And I went up to him afterwards and I said to him, do you know what you were saying? You were singing like this, clapping your hands and saying, it's great, the Jewish people died, here we are. And I don't blame him, he didn't understand the word he was saying. So if you're a chazan, the second responsibility you have beyond knowing the tzibur, you have to bring out the words you're saying that would make sense and get the people involved. If it's happy, it's happy. And there are parts of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening that are very happy. Not just Emet Maneh Dar Yakohen Gadol. The Choma Aminim, I think, is very happy. The Yetau Chola Obdecha V'yitnu Lecha Keter Melucha is a very happy part. But there's parts that are very solemn, and you have to sing them solemnly. You don't sing the vidui al chait, you don't go ahead and start singing it in a nigun that you use for sukkahs. There's different parts of davening that have to be brought out to the people in a substantial way. And it's very important to know the davening, and more importantly, it's very important to use nigunim that will connote and will say what the davening is trying to bring out. So if you chink lechadodi on a Friday night, I hate to say this, not every Friday night's the same. I don't know about you guys. I can't go to a Karblach Minyan every single Friday night. There are Friday nights that I'm not in a good mood. There's no mitzvah of Simcha on Shabbos. All right?
Karblach is different than Gurim.
Okay? But there's people that on Shabbat Chazon, days before Tisha B'Av, we're already not eating meat, we haven't shaved, we haven't showered properly, they do a normal Karblach Minyan with happy clappy singing on a Friday night. And they don't, in my opinion, are not sensitive to the time that they're in.
But they figure Shabbat cancels all.
Shabbat does not cancel all. Shabbat cancels certainly Hugei Avelut, doesn't cancel all. Even when you're sitting Shiva, doesn't cancel all. So ultimately, davening has to be, chazan should be two things. Number one, a true shliach of his tzibur, and know the tzibur. Don't daven what you like, daven what the tzibur you believe will connect to. And number two, connect between the words and the way you say it.
It's obvious to you when the shliach tzibur doesn't know language, and he can't relate to the new tzibur reflecting. So don't think God hears the same issue when we don't know the Hebrew words, but for ourselves. How can we express ourselves with the proper kavanah if we don't know what the words mean?
Like everything else in life, I would say two things. Number one, you're allowed to daven in English. You should know. It's a halacha. You're allowed to daven in English. It's to be a proper translation. But I don't advocate davening in English because I like, when I go into a shul, anywhere in the world, I can daven with them. So if you're going to daven in English and they're going to daven in Italian, then I won't be able to connect. We will start making these internal strives within the Jewish people. Namely, Bruce will only be able to daven in English-speaking countries, but when he goes to Spain, he won't be able to daven. I like to have the Jewish people one. So that's why I don't advocate davening in your language. What I do advocate is reading books like this and other books about davening, the emotion of davening, and learning the Siddur. Just like you learn anything. You read the Hebrew, you read the English, eventually you get it. Not the words of the Siddur, by the way, are not modern Hebrew. I want to make that clear. Yes, modern Hebrew and biblical Hebrew are very close, but they don't always mean the same thing. Just by example. Again, this book was not a translation of davening. It was themes in davening. But, example. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Translate.
Understand, O Israel.
So you say understand. How come you didn't say hear, O Israel?
Because we take a week, separate every week.
Very good. Yes. Can you tell me, davening is in biblical Hebrew. Shema Yisrael is from the Bible. So you have to translate it within the context of the Bible. In the Torah, Shema does not necessarily mean listen. Give me a good example from Yosef. So who, Yosef, the brothers are talking between them. When Yosef starts spatting them on the head, we're guilty. And Reuben said, I told you. And then it says, they forgot exactly the pasuk. And they don't know that Yosef is listening. I understand. Brothers are here. Yosef is here. They don't know he's listening. Of course they know he's listening. What does the pasuk mean? They don't know that Yosef understands what they're saying because they're speaking Hebrew.
Leiv Shomea.
It doesn't necessarily mean always listen.
In modern Hebrew, you often say.
Therefore, the Gemara, one second. The Gemara says, Bechol Lashon Sha'ata Shomea, in every language you understand.
If you translate here of Israel, here also implies not just technically, it means here, get everything
in.
Yeah. When you told me about Solomon, you saw switch to Shiro from Yiddish.
Yes.
When you realize that the students do not follow.
Correct.
Well enough.
Correct. Right. That's totally different. Again, it's totally different. It's totally different. You're mixing up two things here. Rav Soloveitchik was teaching Torah, and Torah has to be taught in the language you understand. Period. And if when he got to the conclusion that people didn't understand Yiddish in Ashir, he switched to English in Boston. He switched to English in New York, and I think it was a great decision. One second. Davening is not a shir you hear in your shul or from your rabbi. Davening is also something all the Jewish people do. So I don't want to advocate a situation where there'll be shuls that you can't go into because you don't understand what they're doing.
I'm not saying that they should daven in the
shul. If necessary, then yes. I was a rabbi for many years, and I'm still a rabbi, and I definitely announced, especially with Shani Yom Kippur, that if you cannot connect to the Hebrew words, there's an English translation and you can say those words. And you should look at it and do it. Now, I don't want to advocate having a shul where the chazan davens in English for various reasons. Right. Amongst them is create that strife within the Jewish people.
But even the translation, you know, it's long, it's tough. It's very hard to
translations today are so Baruch Hashem out there. There's hard translations, easy translations, like anything else in life. The bottom line is, and with this I conclude, you want davening to be at your age, you want it to be an emotional experience, you got to invest time. One of the times, not in davening, outside of davening, one of the times you invest is learning the translation, knowing what you say.
No,
yes?
Well,
you take the sitter, five minutes a day, I believe, you'll be able by the end of the year to know what you're saying.
I know that one of our speakers who teaches us about Tzedot said if he would be allowed to rewrite it, he would rewrite it much shorter, much more important. But we're not allowed to rewrite it for some...
I have a lot to say on how long davening should be. I'm so far from advocating a long davening. Davening can be short, but davening can only be short if you invest time in davening outside of davening.
During the week or on Shabbat?
Also on Shabbat.
Shabbat, I don't mind. I don't mind Shabbat.
I do.
During the week, I mind.
One of the things which you're talking about upgrading, so one of the things that bothers me most of the, what you call our type of shuls in Yerushalayim and the Prat is, okay, you have people who know the Hebrew, but they have cardinal mistakes. For example, Mekel Orech Din. So they combine the wrong lines because initially these were refrains, so they combine the refrain with the next line. It makes sense. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And it bothers me that I heard that in some places in Hebrew, the Rav was very concerned that you should do it the right way.
Yeah.
So they already caught the Rav, and he said, no, I heard from the Rav in Torash, you got to say...
I know.
Or the Kel Orech Din.
I'll tell you something. With the Piyutim on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I'm less worried. You know what I'm more worried about? As a halachic Jew. Chazanim get up to daven, and they also connect the wrong words. Typical. Atah gibor lo'olam Hashem. Anyone want to continue? Mechaye meitim. Atah rav lo'oshia. Or I like my better one. Atah rav lo'oshia. You're a rabbi lo'oshia. What are they talking about? It's mechaye meitim atah. You have resuscitated the dead. Rav lo'oshia, which means you have saved many, from the word rav, ribui. Then you say morid atah lo'mashiv, or rav morid geshem, or nothing. Okay, how many times have you heard it? Tara Voshia. How many times? Tara Voshia.
Exactly these things.
Yes!
These type, or in Ritzeh you have...
Ritzeh is a big machloka, there's a whole chapter
right,
in there. On Ritzeh, where do you put the comma?
You talk about
Oh, yes, yes.
Oh, I didn't,
it's the hardest chapter in my book, the Ritzeh. If you want to read an easy read in my book, don't read the Ritzeh chapter.
When it comes to Rosh Hashanah,
how much art is... Let's finish your show.
And then when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, people think, now with Koren and Rinatistra, more or less everything is in the same print. But people used to think if it's in big print, it's important.
The printers decided what to create.
Slichot, the most important thing is not the Piyutim, it's the Sukkim from the Tanakh.
Yeah, yeah.
So we used to be Slichot with the Salvation after Marin. And then Elul.
Yeah.
It could be like 8 o'clock at night.
I don't want to comment on that.
And you would say the Sukkim, and the Piyutim, he said, just study them later.
Yeah, I know. Look,
people.
The bottom line is.
Sleep is an example of one of the things I say, because people say it, and I feel particularly silly when I do sleep.
Sleepless is a problem.
Yeah.
I don't have a good solution yet for sleepless.
It's a rule.